Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is pure American energy. Born in the USA and with the same 1776 spirit that built this country. Moto, America's social casino, is celebrating that freedom with a 1 million sweeps coin prize giveaway. One lucky American is going to win 1 million sweeps coins. So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Two autopsies, one body, and the answer after 18 days of waiting is a single word: undetermined. The independent autopsy results for Nolan Wells dropped at the NAACP National Convention in Chicago. Ben Crum stood at the podium and told the country his pathologist could not rule out foul play. His specific one. A former medical examiner looked at the same findings and said that they don't point to foul play at all. Both of them, I guess, technically correct, and both of them are leaving out the part that changes everything, because the autopsy answers two completely separate questions, and everybody with a microphone is pretending it only answers one. Before we get to what the independent autopsy found, you need to understand what it didn't have. Dr. Roger Mitchell received Nolan Wells' body in Washington, D.C. on July 10th. Mitchell is the former chief medical examiner of D.C. and the president of the National Medical Association. Thousands of autopsies in his career. He's the man you want to go to if you want a second opinion. But a second opinion isn't the same as a first opinion. We'll get to all that and explain it. Colin Kaepernick paid for the examination. The family sent their son's body across the country because they wanted a pathologist with zero connection to Mississippi law enforcement. Fair enough. By the time Mitchell opened that body, the state of Mississippi had already performed a full autopsy 3 days earlier. And the state's autopsy had access to things Mitchell never could. It's not like they were hiding it. It's just when you do an autopsy, you get one first round of doing an autopsy, and that's just how it works. You can't peel an orange a second time. It just, that's how it works. And the state's autopsy had access to, like I said, things Mitchell never could, because they were the ones conducting the first autopsy. That is how any autopsy would work. The organs had been removed, dissected, and placed back inside the body cavity. The brain had been removed, and the anterior neck structures, the trachea, the hyoid bone, the internal throat, were not with the body at all. Now, before you go, what's that all about? Well, talk to a few forensic medical examiners, and they'll tell you, that's all pretty normal with an autopsy. I know. It sounds kind of shocking on paper. And then you're like, oh, you mean this is just normal practice pretty much across the board? Okay. Well, I didn't know that. Crum stood at the podium and said Mitchell didn't know why they held the throat back. And that framing makes it sound like something is being hidden, or someone is hid something. And we'll come back to whether that's actually true in a few moments. So stick with me there. And I do welcome your comments in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. There was also a red discoloration in the soft tissue at the back of Nolan's skull. Crump called it significant, and we'll come back to that too. Is it significant? Has Crump said a lot of things in this case so far that really haven't turned to pan out to much of anything, other than getting a lot of people upset in ways that maybe they don't need to be, on facts that aren't actually facts. Now, I'm still sitting here telling you, we don't know. We do not know. But one man's conjecture is not fact. Just like another person's conjecture over here saying, well, it can't be foul play. Also, not fact. We don't know. And the autopsy is just one big piece of evidence in this case. As I've said before, that phone's going to tell us a hell of a lot more. So is everybody else's phone around him that very day. We've done a video on that. It's in our feed if you want to go and check that out. But this one is about the autopsy. And the state's autopsy. The complete one, performed July 7th. That has not released a single finding as of yet. 15 days of silence in the people who had the most information. Again, we will get there. First, the two questions. This is the part nobody is seemingly separating very honestly, at least not many. Question one, was someone physically responsible for Nolan Wells' death? Dr. Minchell checked. He performed additional dissections on the decomposed body. He examined every structure available to him, and he found no fractures anywhere. No deep tissue injuries anywhere. No lacerations. The report is specific. Mitchell looked for evidence of blunt force trauma sufficient to cause death, and he did not find it. Those findings hold regardless of the limitations in the report, regardless of what organs were available, regardless of decomposition. If someone had beaten an 18-year-old athlete severely enough to kill him, the skeletal evidence survives. The deep tissue evidence survives. Mitchell would have found it. With or without the lungs, with or without the neck structures, with or without the brain. He didn't find it. That is a finding, a clear one. And the family's legal team has been remarkably quiet about it because it doesn't seem to serve the pressure campaign that their attorney and those who want to latch on to the family for their own reasons, it seems, want to maintain. Need to maintain. They've dug a hole, and now, that's what makes me sick about this whole damn thing. We don't know what happened. And when you prey upon a grieving mother and father who have every damn right to be sensitive and hyper aware and hyper vigilant and asking more questions than the average white guy in Mississippi would ask about a suspicious death. That's sick. They have every right to do that. What they don't need is someone who's going to fan flames without actual information, without actual facts. Now, if evidence points in those directions, we go there. We look, we dig, we need to go there. But I'm telling you, thus far, driving down the highway, I'm not seeing any ramps that point in that direction. Nothing solid yet, anyway. Might we find it? We might. We damn well might. Like I said, that phone and the phones around, that's going to reveal everything. That's going to tell you everything. And if it tells you a big fat nothing because they were in the water and nobody really knew where Nolan went, well, damn. I mean, that certainly makes it even more heartbreaking and confusing, especially if you're a parent, because you certainly want answers. But unfortunately, in reality, sometimes that's how things like this occur, because no one knows exactly what happened except for the dead person. But like I said, dig, ask the questions, look at it all. Just don't jump off cliffs because somebody's, the water's deep there. It'll be great. Jump. Go for it. Do it. You'll love it. It'll be, it's wonderful. Of course it's a, say, like, I don't, it's, no, it's not. We don't really know how deep that water is yet. We don't. We do not know. I hate seeing people being taken advantage of. And look, if this runs into a road where it shows us that there is something nefarious, okay, then good. I'm glad there's somebody that helped get us there, but there's people that can get you there too without fanning flames of speculation before there's actual fact. That's all I'm saying. It could be something nefarious. Still kind of waiting to see that, though. Question two. Did Nolan Wells drown? If he drowned, was he conscious or unconscious when he entered the water? Mitchell could not answer this. He could not directly observe the airway and lungs for water. He could not directly observe the stomach for gastric contents. He could not examine the intact anterior neck structures. He did not have the toxicology results. And every one of those is a tool a forensic pathologist uses to determine drowning. And every one of them was unavailable to him. Doesn't mean it's unavailable. Those things are being examined. That is why the finding is undetermined. Not because the evidence suggests something sinister happened, because the specific evidence needed to answer the drowning question was not accessible to the second pathologist. It was never going to be. That's not you. It's not how the process works. Again, you can't peel an orange twice. You can't. It makes you wonder a little bit about before they even got the results back, before, from an attorney standpoint, I'm not speaking of the parents. The parents are unfortunately along for this hellish ride. It makes you wonder, who's strategizing on the other side going, okay, well, we know that they can't tell us this, so let's make it sound like they're holding something back, even though there's really nothing to hold back, but because this is how an autopsy works. The general public doesn't know that, but if we omit that little factoid, people will be suspicious. Yeah, they will. They will. You're also being dishonest. You're also not being transparent on how these things work. You're lying by omission. And hoping nobody connects the dots to go, oh, you mean this is how they all work? Yeah. That distinction, trauma versus drowning, is the entire honest conversation about this case. The family's legal team is using the drowning determination gap to imply that physical violence might have occurred. But the physical violence question was answered, and the answer was no. Law enforcement on the other side is using the absence of trauma findings to close the book. That's not okay either. But the drowning question has not been answered publicly. Both sides are merging two separate questions into one because keeping them fused serves their position. You see, this is why it's important to stay in the middle until you actually have answers. And to call out inconsistencies, mistruths, misstatements, misdirection on any side of this. Because I'll tell you, it's misdirection when someone goes and says, oh, it doesn't look like foul play, when there's been no autopsy yet, no investigation. Like, that's misdirection, intended or not. Misdirection, yes, without a frickin' doubt, when your sheriff goes and says, that's stupidity, really, I think, at its core. Misdirection at a more extreme. Ignorance, probably at best. It's also all of those things if you're saying and trying to equate information you could not physically gather in your second autopsy because you just can't. You can't examine those things in a second autopsy. And to insinuate that because of that, it must mean this, or suggest maybe it means this, when even if you could have answered those, if you've been part of the first autopsy, still would not reveal what you're asserting that it might mean. Again, that's the same sort of deal, misdirection. And it helps no one. It helps absolutely no one. Nolan is dead. He's not coming back. You know who's still alive? His parents and his friends who loved him, who he grew up with, who he'd spend weekends with. They're not, if they had nothing to do with this, nobody. Very real people whose lives are being attacked and torn apart by the mob who wants to virtue signal how right they are with an incredible lack of facts. Who does that help other than that individual who's so empty inside that they need to attach themselves to a stranger's case to feel whole? By going down a vitriolic route when there's no data to be marching out in any way. Again, if the evidence shows this way or that way, some way, we follow it. And then cause and effect makes sense. Outrage makes sense. It doesn't make sense when it's not being based on much of anything yet. Now, the findings in detail. Mitchell identified a focal area of red discoloration in the soft tissue at the back of Nolan's head near the occipital region. I probably said occipital region. I'm not a doctor. No skull fractures beneath it. No lacerations in the skin around it either. Mitchell's report says the cause of that discoloration remains unknown. It could be injury. It could be decomposition. It could be post-mortem artifact from the body's position in the water. The report does not say which. Crump presented it as significant. Mitchell's report presents it as inconclusive because it's inconclusive. It's a lot of reasons that could be. And if there was lacerations, if there was an attack, if there was something that hit you there, there'd be evidence of that. And there's not. I've watched many forensic pathologists and examiners now talk about this specific case and that specific thing and who have no dog in this fight. Blood pools. There's a lot of reasons for it. And the evidence that exists doesn't point to trauma. Two forensic experts who had nothing to do with this case looked at that same finding and came to very different readings. Dr. Michael Baden, a former medical examiner, said it doesn't suggest foul play. He described it as a superficial impact consistent with bumping into debris in the water, something that could have happened before death or after. He called it a minor injury that could be totally innocent. He said Mitchell was reaching for straws. Dr. Kendall Von Crowns, the chief medical examiner in Tarrant County, Texas, told CNN the finding is genuinely ambiguous. The discoloration could represent decompositional changes of the muscular structure, or it could be from blunt force injury to the back of the head and neck, except for the fact that there isn't blunt force injury to the back of the head or neck consistent with that. One expert says it's nothing. One expert says, could be either. Neither of them is lying. After 6 days of decomposition and two autopsies, the tissue itself may never settle the question. I never thought it would. It's a legitimate unknown. It's not a smoking gun. It's not an exoneration. It's red discoloration with no fracture beneath and no way to determine what caused it at this stage. The limitation in Mitchell's report sound alarming if you read them in isolation. In context, every one of them is a standard consequence of being the second pathologist to examine a body, the organs removed and dissected during the first autopsy. That's how an autopsy works. You can't unpeel the orange. Place back inside the body cavity for a second pathologist to review. That is textbook forensic protocol. It's not suspicious. It's not weird. It's not somebody doing something nefariously. It is how this works. The internal autopsy follows a standard sequence. Corneal scalp incision, brain removal, Y-shaped incision to the torso, organs removed and examined individually. Mitchell's own report describes this procedure as expected. The throat, the anterior neck structures, the trachea, the hyoid bone, airway, were retained by the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office. Crump told reporters Mitchell didn't know why they held the throat back, but Mitchell's own report calls the retention of anterior neck structures common forensic pathology practice. Wonder why they're doing it. I'm going to pitch this as being suspicious, even though we know this is very common practice for an autopsy. So is it really suspicious, or is that the narrative you'd like to continue pushing down? I'm confused. Who are you helping here? Are you helping the family? Are you helping them grieve? Are you helping them work through this in a balanced way that truly will benefit them long term mentally? Or are you going down a road that you want to go down? Gets you a lot of attention. It's kind of become your MO, really. Every generation has them. Layer by layer, dissection of the anterior neck is a required component of evaluating potential trauma. Removal for exterior examination is standard. ABC News independently confirmed with doctors not involved in the case. That's routine for pathologists to retain organs or tissue for deeper examination. Secondary autopsies are inherently more difficult than the primary for exactly this reason. The Mississippi State Medical Examiner released a statement on July 22nd saying its autopsy was performed in accordance with the standard procedures and protocols followed for all autopsies. Mitchell's own report agrees. Independent physicians agree. The limitations that made the independent autopsy inconclusive are not the result of misconduct. They are not evidence of a cover-up. They are the unavoidable structural reality of being second in line. No independent autopsy in Mississippi, in D.C., anywhere in the country would have had access to the airway in its original condition, the lungs before dissection, or the stomach contents before examination. The first pathologist always gets the most complete picture. That is not a conspiracy. That is forensic pathology. Mitchell listed 7 outstanding questions at the end of his report, and they are not accusations. They are the gaps that remain. What led Nolan Wells to enter the water? What position was his body in when found? Was there water in his airway? Was there evidence of injuries to his neck? Was there intracarnal hemorrhaging? What was in his stomach? What did the toxology determine? 7 questions, 5 of them, the airway, the neck, the hemorrhaging, the stomach, the toxology, can only be answered by the first autopsy, the state's autopsy, the one that had everything Mitchell didn't. That autopsy was performed on the morning of July 7th, one day after the body was recovered. The pathologist had the airway in its original condition. He had lungs intact. He had the stomach contents. He had the anterior neck structures. He had the brain. Had first access to a body with far less decomposition than what Mitchell received 3 days later. The stakes examination is the most complete forensic picture of Nolan Wells' death that will ever exist. It was completed 15 days before the independent results were made public. It has not been released yet. Jackson County Coroner Bruce Lind Jr. said the state's report isn't out because some results, including toxicology, are still pending. Some of those, unfortunately, take time. He said the release would have to come from the prosecutor's office. Jackson County District Attorney Angel Myers-McLarth has not responded to requests for comment. The Jackson County Sheriff's Department has provided limited information about the investigation and has not responded to press inquiries from Mississippi Today or other outlets. Meanwhile, Sheriff John Ledbetter told ABC News he suspects Nolan drowned. Well, the investigation remains officially open. That's the same tension the family has flagged from the start. A public conclusion announced before the public evidence exists to support it. I wish officials would just shut up. We don't know yet. We don't know yet. Not, I think, I feel, maybe, looks like. You know, if you want to say that because you're a podcaster, you're Joe on the street, you're Sally in the subway. I just made that one up. Whatever. I mean, everyone's entitled to an opinion. I like to base mine on fact. I like to base mine on information, not feeling. Is that what opinions are? Feelings? No. Opinions really should be based on fact. That's how you develop an opinion. Feelings are feelings. Feelings are the gut punches you feel initially when you hear about something, and your prior experiences rush to your brain and tell you, well, this might be like that. That's called confirmation bias. And a lot of feelings are built on confirmation bias. And look, there's plenty of freaking reason to have confirmation bias in Mississippi. When a black person dies, without a freaking doubt, ask the questions, demand answers. But we also have to take the answers in. And if they confirm something different than what that confirmation bias is, that those of us looking at this with history as a prism, going, well, it's Mississippi. I don't necessarily trust this or that. I really want to, you know, if it comes back and it shows, yeah, you know what? Amazingly, this might not have been some sort of horrific racial crime. Then maybe it's not that. The evidence that exists with the friend group, again, none of it really appears to point in any way, shape, or form that there was some sort of animosity between him and his friends that were not of the same color. They didn't really seem to see all that. You know who seemed to see all that? Everybody out here. Everybody out here who wants to say, you mean there's not animosity and you don't? Like, no. Believe it or not, a lot of people who live in environments with people of mixed races and different ethnicities and every different spectrum of everything, you don't tend to see all that much because this is your normal. These are the people that you love, the people that you care about, the people who are around you on a daily basis that support you and help make you who you are. They're a part of you. So it's insanely insulting to them for strangers to go in and turn it into something that and define relationships that they know nothing about, were never a part of, and are completely contrary to reality. If there was evidence of Nolan having a bunch of racist friends, look, we're almost a month out from this happening at this point. I think we would have seen some evidence of it by now. There would be text messages. There would be images. There would be video. These people film most of their lives. They're young. They are attached to their cameras most of the time, except for when they go to the ocean with no service. If there had been a track record of any of that leading up to here, I think we probably would have seen some of it by now. And well, maybe they're scared. Maybe like that. Maybe, but I mean, we're talking a lot of people here and no leakage. Again, wherever the evidence takes us, if that stuff exists, if anybody has evidence of that, please put it out there. If that exists, I beg of you, put it out there. And if it doesn't, well, then it doesn't. That's why you have to follow the case where it takes you. Not where someone over there wants you to go with it. Mitchell wrote in his report that in cases where a death occurs in or around water with a suspicion of drowning, it is important to confirm how that person entered the water. Not that that's suspicious, but how did he get there? Well, there was hundreds of people going in and out of the water. He was one of them. That could be the answer. I'm not saying it is. I don't know. He wrote that this information is especially important for deaths of persons who can swim. Nolan could swim. Mitchell called the condition of Nolan Wells before he entered the water the crux of the matter. He said determining that condition would be of utmost importance, and he could not determine it because the evidence he needed is sitting in a file he does not have. So strip away the press conferences and the competing forensic opinions and the national spotlight. What the independent autopsy tells us, stated plainly, no evidence of physical violence was found on Nolan Wells' body. No fractures, no deep tissue injuries, no lacerations. No question of how he ended up in the water and whether he was alive when he went in remains unanswered. Not because the evidence doesn't exist, but because the examination that has it hasn't been made public. A combined $125,000 in reward money is on the table from Al Sharpton, Tyler Perry, and Terrell Owens. That money is offered for information leading to an arrest and conviction if a crime occurred. The NAACP passed a resolution calling for a complete federal review. The grand jury referral from the district attorney is still pending, and the family has an incomplete answer from a second autopsy, and silence from the first. Nolan Wells' family buried their son 2 days before these results were released. Christine Wells Wansley stood at that press conference in Chicago and said one sentence that cuts through every expert opinion and every legal strategy on both sides of the case. She said the only question they have is what happened to their son. She said hearing nothing from local authorities while holding preliminary autopsy results is heartbreaking and concerning. The people who may be able to answer that question have a completed autopsy, a pending toxicology panel, retained neck structures, and an open investigation. They also have a sheriff who already told the national media that he thinks what happened was, you know, nothing. That file could settle this one way or the other. It exists. It's being developed. The family that lost their 18-year-old son on a barrier island off the Mississippi Gulf Coast. The Gulf of Mexico. Is still waiting for someone to hand it over. We'll keep following it wherever this case goes. At the end of the day, again, we just don't know. But we're getting more pieces. We're getting more pieces of the puzzle. But they're not all here yet. We're not ready to solve the puzzle, Pat. So let's spin the wheel again. See where it lands. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we try to deliver you a very clear, honest, balanced view of this case. We will follow it anywhere it goes. But this is where it sits right now. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
$125,000 in reward money is on the table for information leading to an arrest and conviction, but there's no arrest, no suspect, and no evidence a crime was even committed. Crump, the attorney for the family, announced the independent autopsy results at the NAACP National Convention in Chicago, not in Mississippi, where the investigation is actually happening. Does the machinery around this case serve the truth or the narrative? That's the question I think a lot of people are starting to ask here. We're going to ask it too. I want to say we don't know. We will follow this case wherever it goes. I'm not vested. Nobody here is vested in it being this way or that way. But I am vested in people not being taken advantage of people not being used for another agenda to tack on, because it's a lot of public attention right now. Sharpton and Tyler Perry put up $100,000 reward at the funeral. Terrell Owens added another $25,000. But a reward for arrest and conviction? It assumes a crime was committed, which as of right now, other than some conflicting statements of teenagers of he was going to go hang out with girls and he was going to go hang out with boys, when you publicly offer six figures before the autopsy is even back, you don't have the digital information back. A lot of assumptions are being made that Snapchat was deleted. That really has not been proven yet. It's all conjecture. All of it is conjecture. Other than the independent autopsy we have back, which is now inconclusive. But all of this, the reward offers, all of that came out before even that was out. What message does that send to a grand jury pool, Eric?
You know, I think that there are multiple problems potentially with these reward offers. And look, I get it. Folks stepping up and trying to get justice and offering their means that they have to try to help out this family. I completely understand that. On the flip side, though, the concern for me is that especially if the reward is for arrest and conviction, well, somebody hears that and they want $125,000. How do I get it? Well, I got to give information. What type of information? The type of information must be one of a criminal nature. It could be of an innocent explanation, because then I don't get the reward. So I'm worried that folks might tailor what they're reporting in a way that steers in the direction of them getting $125,000, regardless of whether there was a crime actually committed. And so I think that putting that qualifier on it, that arrest and conviction is how you get the reward, I think it really gives me pause about the reliability of such information that might flow from that.
Yeah, I face this in the Bureau a lot of times too, it's a confirmation bias you're incentivizing because you're trying to fulfill something to get something in return for it. And I don't know why you'd need it to begin with, because why wouldn't people come forward with this? There's no motive to hide this information in a lot of people around there. So it's challenging, no doubt. I hope they don't need to do that, but it's fraught with some challenges, just because you then have to sift through what was the motivation to forward this information. Was it the money, or was it truth, justice? I mean, I think it adds potentially a complication. But also, I did research on this one too. It's common to do this. It's not uncommon for be incentivized before there's actually a target.
It's just interesting. I mean, how it could steer it in different ways. When it comes down to the motivations of everyone there, everyone involved. We've talked about this a little bit. People have been you'd think there'd be more video that would be out by now. But one of the big reasons that I think we've discussed here, why would someone, if you have video, even if it's not nefarious, it's just people partying out on the island, that can still tell you something. But a lot of people don't want to reveal that if they have any of it, because a lot of them are college kids and a lot of them are drinking and a lot of them are involved in things. And if, suddenly the video comes out of you drinking, it might not bode too well. And that person might be going, I'm not losing my scholarship. I'm not losing my place on this team or this or that because of this shit show that went on over here or this accident that went on over here. I had nothing to do with it. I'm not going to sacrifice everything I've done because I had a couple drinks on a boat one day and something went horribly wrong over here. So there's a lot of independent levers that are being pulled for different motivational purposes here. I want to address a quick comment I saw there where it says Crump asking what was it, white people to come forward. I want to address that because, look, Nolan was not the only black kid on the island that day. There was a lot. Because, again, this is, and the groups of friends have talked about it. They're a very large, diverse group of people. This wasn't Clan Island, and he was the only black child on it. And he's an adult, too. He's not a child. He's 18. So that was not this. And I think characterizing it that way, and I think a lot of people get that in their heads, that's not good. That's not healthy. Let's look at this from reality's standpoint. So if we're going to say, okay, asking people to come forward, you're asking every person on that island, anybody who's trying to come forward, and there was plenty of black people, and there was plenty of, you name it, there's a mixture of every type of human being on the thing, and they were all there to have a good time, if nothing happened here. So it's weird to think that, okay, if this is racially motivated, if something big happened, that you have literally gotten everybody of every spectrum, of every color of the rainbow, all together saying, nope, we're not going to talk, because we somehow have it out for him because he's black. I just, it's a very strong narrative that's seeming at play here, and it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, again, it's, they're basing it off of photos of the island. Just, again, research, as you're saying, Tony. So he was the only black man amongst his friends.
On the three-person boat, they went out with right. many other and, boats with and, other and friends,
so,
too.
So let's just go to Crumb's statement. It's like, you know, the only the people coming forward and sharing everything are his white friends. So that's already sure. happening, and they're the ones yeah. being really forthright. So they're basing off of just the photos yeah. that are coming from the island. And also, I know we're getting a lot of comments also on the deleted text.
We don't know that anything was deleted.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why everyone needs to be really, really challenge the information you get and interrogate it in the sense of, is it conjecture? Because it is, it's a wobble. The only where this came from, it's a wobble from the family saying, according to their context of their son and how he interacts with the world, it's strange that there's not more than what he had because yeah. they saw it as a wobble. But there's been zero law enforcement or zero confirmation from anyone that anything's been deleted. And so it, to say it's been deleted says that you that it's an affirmative fact that it has been. It's not been established whatsoever, and no one's indicated that yet. So always be careful to then go down roads of conspiracy theories that these things are deleted. No, that's why we interrogate that information. We do critical thinking around and say, all right, let's play this forward. I mean, live we do it. We do all the research nonstop before, after, during to see where the truth is.
Eric, how much is that phone going to be the end-all, be-all of this case once they get the forensic testing back on it? I mean, this feels like it's going to be stronger than the autopsy, stronger than any sort of other evidence. That thing's going to tell us everything. If there's shit deleted on that phone, with all the way. Let's dig. But if we don't know that yet. But if there is, that's something. That's weird if somebody's going in and deleting text messages for whatever reason on that day or Snapchats. That would be very bizarre. Are, but we don't know that yet. But again, how critical is his phone and the phones of his friends and the stories they tell to the story?
Totally. You know, in looking at it, an 18-year-old in our modern society, chances are they are using that phone regularly, like perhaps every few minutes or something like that. In fact, it can almost give like a real-time historical record of what that person was doing, what they were thinking about, what was going on in their head, things like that. And so we'll hopefully reveal GPS location. That happens with phones so long as there is the proper connectivity to record that information, which is unclear in on an island. But GPS location, text messages he was sending and receiving, potentially emails, potentially social media activity, potentially web history searches. All of that can really piece together what he was doing and what he was thinking about in those moments if he was using it. Now, if he had left it on the boat for a significant period of time and was not interacting with that phone, then it's going to tell us less.
I think one thing they're going to be looking at with that, too, is then comparing not just Nolan's, but everyone else's phone on that island as well, too, to see if it's conforming to the pattern of everyone's phone. Was everyone's phone on the boat? Was everyone's phone plus in the same area? Was the amount of traffic and texting that people typically did beforehand equal to what happened on the island or what happened afterhand? That's why, to your point, Eric, you know, people especially this age group, are on those phones so much, transferring so much data, so much information, so much about themselves and how they're living, how they're interacting, their thoughts, ideas, that it's going to really be very, very telling both before, during, and after all these events to see and help direct, you know, where would you need to focus in the investigation.
And that's going to be, I'm very curious, obviously, what's in his phone. I'm very curious what's on all the friends' phones, because there you're also going to be looking at communications, and not necessarily with his phone, amongst themselves. If there's some, if something is being covered up here, they're going to find it. They're going to find it. And I think it's wonderful that this phone is being downloaded and reviewed by two different sources, the official investigators and the independent investigators. Yep. I think that's wonderful. And that's very different than the autopsy. I mean, an autopsy, look, you can have whatever your intentions are. It is what it is. You can only do an autopsy the first time, the first time. There's no second first time for an autopsy. So it is what it is with a second autopsy. You're not going to get it in pristine condition. But what you do get with the phone is duplicate results. And that's not necessarily something that can be spun two different ways if there's something there or not. The friends who are with Nolan are getting death threats. A chancery judge, also the stepmother of one of them, which has led a lot of people to go, well, one of the kid's mom is a judge. Yeah, not the judge in this case, but yeah. I mean, again, I get why it goes like, that's weird. Yeah, it certainly feels, but it is what it is. I mean, people have jobs. Some of them are in the legal system. Had to post publicly about the threats her family has been getting. There's been AI-generated images and debunked videos are circulating as evidence. If the grand jury finds no crime here, who's accountable for what happened to those kids in the meantime?
Gosh, I'm not sure the justice system has a great answer to that. You know, if there was all of this fervor and some perhaps exaggeration, even fabrication, misleading statements, emotions going all over the place, these threats on top of that, if the threat rises to the level of criminality, then those folks could potentially be held accountable, but that's not terribly likely. And, it might just be at the end. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't have a case, civil or criminal, against anybody. And there is no justice for this tremendous loss. That could be the outcome.
I mean, we've seen cases where people are hell-bent saying, you're a criminal. You're a criminal. Karen Reed comes to mind. Dipshit Turtle Boy, who walks around, you know, with a megaphone and attacking people. We're seeing that all play out, and the conspiring that went on there. I'm not saying that that's what's happening here, because I believe this family is suffering and they're dealing with a lot of people with a lot of different motives. But you have people who are grandstanding, who are saying pretty harsh things about who are Nolan's closest friends. If they're getting death threats, if they can show that this has affected their life in some way, shape, or form, wherever that may be, however that may be, I guess what's the bar for them to go back and go after Crump? I mean, that would be interesting. I mean, if this turns out to be nothing, stirring a pot where there is nothing to stir, or you don't have the information yet. Again, I've been all about dig, expose, if there's something to expose, but don't say there's shit where there's not shit. Or misstate things where there's things that shouldn't be misstated in ways that are going to get people riled up and going down a lane of something that doesn't exist. And he has certainly been doing that. And if it goes down that lane and there's bad shit that went on here, okay, then we're going down that lane. Then he was right. But if it turns out there was no foul play here, and this has all been going on, and these family have had to go through hell, and it will continue to follow them, because at the end of the day, people are still going to believe what they're going to believe no matter what comes out here. If you're the one stirring the pot, if you're the one with a call to action here, calling this criminal, and if it turns out not to be criminal, how liable are you as an independent attorney?
Yeah, you know, Crump goes after folks for being negligent all the time. Could he have been negligent in this instance? How that might look, Tony, is an argument such that, you know, he was negligent in how he presented information and presenting information that might not have been substantiated, sometimes perhaps mischaracterizing things. Yeah. And then did that cause damages to another person? Well, if a person is receiving death threats because a high-profile individual is stirring the pot and getting this perhaps inaccurate information out there, and then another question is it foreseeable for Crump if he's negligent in how he's presenting information that might rile somebody up to do something inappropriate, like make a death threat against another person? If there is that negligence and there is causation and there's foreseeability, those are really the essential elements you need for a negligence case.
Is that the same thing as when someone, you know, that old analogy people use of, yeah, you have free speech, but you can't pull a fire alarm and say there's a fire and people die because they're rushing out the door when there's no fire just because you wanted to see how people reacted?
I think that's a very on point analogy for this scenario. If Crump has been less than responsible in how he's presented information, and you know he's getting information as it comes to him, and he is not he's by nature skeptical of law enforcement and the government, the information they're providing. So he's getting his own information. Sometimes it's conflicting. Sometimes a piece is substantiated. Another piece might have yet to be substantiated. So he's dealing with a lot too in terms of trying to give the public information, but you have to do so responsibly, and he's got to make sure he's doing that.
I'm sure every statement he's making, he's planning out what he's going to say and how he's going to say it, to get the most mileage out of this for himself. So I would imagine all inner communications that he's had with his team and people he's talking to and how they're going to position this and how they're going to pitch it and how he's going to say it out loud at the NAACP convention in Chicago or at a funeral. I'm assuming all those intercommunications would be ripe for subpoenaing or discovery should a civil case be brought at some point in time.
Oh, totally. Because what they'll want to learn is whether Crump or somebody on his team is presenting information with some knowledge that it could be questionable or even dubious. And if there was such evidence, you know, where they're talking in text, and I'm just saying hypothetically, I have no idea if this exists, but if there was a text that said, you know, hey, I'm not sure you should say X in public because we haven't verified it yet. And then the response text is, yeah, but that's really going to drum up more attention. This case needs that attention. I think we got to do it. That's when you start to get in a real dicey scenario.
Go ahead, Tony.
Sorry. Yeah, it's all about expose. If there's something to expose, expose it. That is wonderful. But if there's not, you can't make shit up for your own moving your own agenda forward. If that's not there, Robin, go ahead.
Yeah, and basically riffing off what you said, Tony, are there guardrails in place for these types of situations for the communication people are allowed and expected to have that then they know, hey, I can't fall can't fall too far either way of this, that there are guardrails, or it's very subjective on every case?
Oh, it's entirely subjective, and different attorneys, sort of are calibrated differently and have different risk tolerances, and some are bombastic and out there and willing to toe the line and sometimes step over it, whereas others are extremely cautious. And so I don't know that the guardrails would be the laws of defamation and negligence, but those guardrails can be a little flimsy.
And that's the question too. So other than defamation, which is harder. What other laws? So negligence, that's another law that could come to play here, is like what could someone pursue?
Yeah, in addition to negligence, like we talked about, possibly defamation, making a false statement about somebody if it was a statement of fact. And then another one that comes to mind is negligent infliction of emotional distress. If you're negligently presenting information with knowledge that this could really upset somebody, then that could be a claim as well.
All it takes is one crazy person. It takes one crazy person to be unbalanced in how they're taking in this information and go off the deep end and go, those people need to have this sort of consequence, fueled by speculation and false conclusions that we just don't have the answers to yet. God forbid something happened to one of Nolan's close friends that were with him that day, if they had nothing to do with this. And it's a result of some crazy person being riled up and doing something horrible to them. If that were to happen, my God, I mean, would that be a referendum on this kind of vitriol or this kind of jumping to conclusions this early in an investigation? I get the history without a freaking doubt. So anybody who's like, well, yeah, I know that it's horrible. They should be asking every damn question. It's great that there's an independent investigations going on here side by side. Mississippi has an absolute shit history of how they've treated black people up to today. And they still do in many, many ways. So great. But again, if this is not that, and we're running everything through the filter, we're looking at everything and going, oh, well, looks like this is not, it's not what they had done in the past. People aren't being railroaded here for some sort of nefarious reason. This was just one of the many hundreds of drowning cases that happen every year that had nothing to do with race or something criminal. If something happens to one of those people, what does that look like, Eric, legally?
Gosh, yeah. You know, who would be responsible for that? And in what justice system forum? You know, naturally, there would be a criminal case if they identify the assailant and can prove that they did this. But on the civil side is where it gets a little more tricky, a little more complicated. Yeah. Certainly, the actor themselves could have civil responsibility. But could Crump, could somebody else who is contributing to this overly heated environment, especially if they at this juncture, you know, they already know that there have been death threats. They know that some of these actions in terms of public disclosure has led some members of the public to take extreme measures. So with that knowledge, if they continue to make public disclosures in a negligent fashion and knowing that death threats have already been levied, what's the next step after a death threat? We all know that answer. And that could be the foreseeability component of a negligence claim under those circumstances.
Words have meaning. Just as the sheriff saying so early on, it doesn't look like it's anything criminal. You don't know that yet. Words have meaning. Don't say that out loud. Same with Crump. Words have meaning. Robin?
Yeah, and going back to one of the comments and questions we had on there too, questioning the drowning, finding his body in the same area in which he supposedly drowned, if he was drowned and wasn't foul play, with rip currents, is that someone thought it might be unusual, but it is actually common and it's possible and relatively common because the way currents flow, because of the out, the in, bottom, up, down. I did the research on it. Body was discovered by park ranger in morning of July 6th, northwestern tip of island, consistent with area known strong currents. In short, finding a drowning victim close to the suspected site is not unusual when riptides and local current patterns are involved. Does not by itself rule out that it wasn't drowning. So, yes, it actually happens. So I just wanted to answer that.
Happens a lot.
Yep.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. At the end of the day, we still don't know, and we will follow this wherever it may lead.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prize. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prize. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.